Now that some of the euphoria has lifted, it is possible to re-examine the Israeli PLO argument with the required common sense. What emerges from such scrutiny is a deal that is more flawed and, for most of the Palestinian people, more unfavorably weighted than many had first supposed. The fashion show vulgarities of the White House ceremony, the degrading spectacle of Yasser Arafat thanking everyone for the suspension of most of his people's rights, and the fatuous solemnity of Bill Clinton's performance, like a 20th century Roman emperor shepherding two vassal kings through rituals of reconciliation and obeisance, all these only temporarily obscure the truly astonishing proportions of the Palestinian capitulation. So first of all, let us call the agreement by its real name, an instrument of Palestinian surrender, a Palestinian Versailles. What makes it worse is that for at least the past 15 years, the PLO could have negotiated a better arrangement than this modified Allen plan, one not requiring so many unilateral concessions to Israel. For reasons best known to the leadership, it refused all previous overtures. To take one example of which I have personal knowledge, in the late 70s, Secretary of State Cyrus Vance asked me to persuade Arafat to accept Resolution 242 with a reservation, accepted by the U.S., to be added by the PLO, which would insist on the national rights of the Palestinian people, as well as Palestinian self-determination. Vance said that the U.S. would immediately recognize the PLO and inaugurate negotiations between it and Israel. Arafat categorically turned the offer down, as he did similar offers. Then the Gulf War occurred, and because of the disastrous positions it took then, the PLO lost even more ground. The gains of the Intifada were squandered, and today advocates of the new document say, quote, we had no alternative, unquote. The correct way of phrasing that is, quote, we had no alternative because we either lost or threw away a lot of others, leaving us only this one, unquote. In order to advance toward Palestinian self-determination, which has a meaning only if freedom, sovereignty, and equality, rather than perpetual subservience to Israel, are its goal, we need an honest acknowledgement of where we are now that the interim agreement is about to be negotiated. What is particularly mystifying is how so many Palestinian leaders and their intellectuals can persist in speaking of the agreement as a quote-unquote victory. Bill Shath has called it one of, quote, complete parity, unquote, between Israelis and Palestinians. The fact is that Israel has conceded nothing, as former Secretary of State James Baker said in a TV interview, except, blandly, the existence of, quote, the PLO as the representative of the Palestinian people, unquote. Or, as the Israeli quote-unquote dove, Amos Oz, reportedly put it in the course of a BBC interview, quote, this is the second biggest victory in the history of Zionism, unquote. By contrast, Arafat's recognition of Israel's right to exist carries with it a whole series of renunciations of the PLO Charter, of violence and terrorism, of all relevant UN resolutions except 242 and 338, which do not have one word in them about the Palestinians, their rights, or aspirations.